Be seated. We call the next case, number 20-30734, Anthony Allen et al. Versus State of Louisiana et al. Mr. McPhee.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. There can only be one map containing the districts from which the Louisiana Supreme Court justices are elected. The current map is a product of a consent decree issued by the Eastern District of Louisiana. I will note that in 2012, the Eastern District emphatically asserted that it had continuing jurisdiction over the case. Despite the existence of the decree, and despite the fact that Judge Morgan in the Eastern District had emphasized that she retained jurisdiction, the plaintiffs went to the Middle District of Louisiana, and they claimed that the current map violates the Voting Rights Act, even though it is the product of a consent decree that is being supervised by the Eastern District. Over the state's motion to dismiss, the district court agreed that it had power and jurisdiction to consider and to redraw the map, to consider the case and redraw the map if there was indeed a VRA violation. That was error. Only the district.
So, look, I've read Judge DeGravel's order. He says it's a closed case. I tend to agree. Let me ask you this. You say there must be one map. The point of the Chisholm v. Romer was the map of the Louisiana Supreme Court. The point of this lawsuit is the map. I get that. I get that, because in some sense, the districts are interrelated. Practically speaking, though, help me with this, just from a practical common sense point of view. The point of Chisholm v. Romer was the one multi-member district that was allegedly diluting black voting strength. And there's a change in that now, it's two single-member districts. The point of this lawsuit is the first district, the one around Baton Rouge. That's really the target. So my sense from Judge DeGravel's order is, look, yeah, there might be some theoretical overlap in the lawsuits, but the practical impact of the first one was Orleans. This one's about Baton Rouge. What's the response to that?
True, Your Honor. I think that Judge DeGravel's order certifying the interlocutory appeal maybe walked that back a little bit. In fact, at one point, he even says that the effect of the relief requested by the plaintiffs in this case, the net effect is identical to the relief requested in the Eastern District, which is a redrawing of all seven maps, of all seven districts. And so,
I was troubled by that too a little bit. Let me ask you this though. I don't know if you know this or if this is even a fair question, but I'll ask it anyway. In the Chisholm lawsuit that resulted in turning the one multi-member district into two single-member districts, did that involve redrawing just those two? Or did it involve some kind of adjustment of the entire map?
It did, I believe, necessarily implicate the entire map to some degree. And it wasn't even just those districts. There's an amendment to the decree, and there it actually also split. It wasn't just the Orleans Parish, but there was another district that was also at play. And that's sort of the nature of redistricting generally, is just that you can't change the map without affecting the other districts.
But then again, I go to practical effect. So imagine we have litigation in the Middle District on this claim, and let's say the plaintiffs win. Then as a question of remedy, we would have to figure out how to redraw.
Right. And theoretically, you're going to have two maps. And
who would do that redraw?
Well, presumably, the court would enter in a new map that we would be required to follow.
Wouldn't the court ordinarily have to give the legislature a shot at it before it attempts to take pen in hand, doesn't it?
That's true, Your Honor, and that is what we saw with the last round of litigation in Chisholm, and the legislature did do that. There was sort of a temporary relief that was agreed to by the parties, but yeah, I believe that was Act 5.
Because I understand that there's never been any reapportionment of these judicial districts.
Right. I believe that the map is the same from 1997.
Yeah. But there could have been, right?
Yes, there could have been. I believe, though, that they would have needed to go and seek clearance from the Eastern District on that, though. But I would like to turn, I think it's important to note that consent decrees are different. Consent decrees are, they implicate, let's say, the highest and most essential principles of comity and judicial administration that exists in the federal judiciary. This is not the first time that one district judge has attempted to modify a consent or an order from another judge. In fact, the principles at play here are much older than even this litigation, which is longstanding. This goes all the way back to English common law, where under the writ of, and forgive my Latin, audita querela, there was, of course, the ability for one court, for a court to modify its order if necessary. The rule then was that only the court that issued the order could modify it. And of course, Rule 60 of the Federal Civil Rules of Procedure did away with audita querela and those doctrines. But we still see today district judges attempting to modify each other's order or to issue dueling injunctions, that sort of thing. And
has the state of Louisiana ever tried to modify the consent decree or terminate it under Rule 60?
No.
Could it?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe we could go and seek, or the plaintiffs could, if they wanted to bring this action in the Middle District.
Can we go back to the way you started this particular line of discussion, which is the consent decrees are different? It strikes me that a consent decree is a settlement agreement with continuing jurisdiction, but it's at root.
But in this case, yes.
Perfect. So it's a settlement agreement between two parties 50 years ago. It's a contract. So my question, if you're with me so far, is could two parties 50 years ago enter into a contract that would say future disputes either between us or third parties can be brought in federal district court even when the amount in controversy is $50,000?
I believe the answer is no.
Of course not, because 1332 provides jurisdiction only where the amount in controversy is $75,000 or more. So I don't understand how a contract between two parties long gone 50 years ago can oust jurisdiction under 1331.
Yes, and this goes to, we're not saying that okay, so I don't take your Honor's question to be, is this preclusion? It's not, but what it is that there is this sense of comity in judicial administration. We cited Thagard v. City of Jackson, and I'm coming to answer your questions, your Honor's question, in footnote 3 for this proposition that only the district court supervising implementation of the decree should have subject matter jurisdiction to modify the decree. And then, because Thagard was later overruled by the Supreme Court in Martin v. Wilkes under sort of the reverse, under preclusion principles, but that footnote 3 that says that there is no more, that you don't have subject matter jurisdiction, that was not overruled, I believe, by Martin v. Wilkes. And we can see that because the Tenth Circuit, Thagard was citing a First Circuit case called Colbreth v. Dukakis. And the Tenth Circuit just very recently cited Colbreth in a case called Navajo Nation v. San Juan County and said, quote, when a court accepts a consent decree and enters an accompanying order, it often retains jurisdiction over the matter, as here. If it does so, other courts necessarily lack subject matter jurisdiction over suits seeking to modify that decree.
And how in the world could that apply to third parties not It strikes me that it's very interesting as to between the original signatories of the Chisholm consent decree, right? And that's the hypothetical we just went through about diversity jurisdiction. It's a whole nother thing. It's a whole nother inferential leap to say that parties 50 years ago, not before our court, can oust, because we would agree, right, that there is 1331 jurisdiction absent the consent decree. It's clearly arising under federal law and the constitutional laws of the United States. Okay, so there's clearly 1331 jurisdiction in the Middle District over the dispute, absent the consent decree. But the theory must be that somehow the consent decree from 50 years ago affects a plaintiff, not a party to that contract, 50 years hence.
Right, and I really think that the answer is that it goes to the court's power over its own jurisdiction. It sort of sucks all the oxygen out of the room, at least for consent decrees. Now,
Here's a question. How about this? Let's make it really concrete to this kind of dispute. Could a district judge in the District of Columbia in an APA suit, right? So it's a suit against a federal official under the Administrative Procedure Act regarding some kind of whatever, let's just say an EPA action, enter a consent decree with the Environmental Protection Agency and say all future EPA suits must be brought in DDC. It cannot be brought in any other district court, notwithstanding all of the other jurisdictional provisions passed by Congress. Could they do that? If a plaintiff and the EPA agreed, we're just going to do all of these in notwithstanding what Congress says. Yes?
They could enter into that consent decree. The court would have to approve it. And then maybe, yes, because of the...
Really?
Maybe the court's own power over that would suck all the oxygen out of the room.
Then what is the point of what Congress is doing in the jurisdictional statutes? I mean, because the Hobbs Act, the APA, I mean, there's all kinds of these statutes that Congress has passed and been around as long as administrative agencies have, and they don't say that. In fact, Congress does have provisions where mandatory jurisdiction applies for petitions for review, but I guess they're just empty text in the U.S. Code if parties can just agree privately and find a district judge who would do it to do it a different way.
Your point is well taken, Your Honor. So let me to sort of explain why I think consent decrees are different. Where there is continuing jurisdiction, let me fall back a little and acknowledge that the Ninth Circuit in Rule 60B said that it wasn't going to go quite so far as to say that there was no jurisdiction in a case called Lappin v. Schulten. It didn't go that far for Rule 60B, and I think that there's a difference between a Rule 60B, if I get an order in one district court and I go and I file a Rule 60B motion in another district court asking to change that. The Ninth Circuit wasn't quite willing to say that there was a jurisdictional bar. It did analyze it under an abuse of discretion standard. And under the abuse of discretion standard, but it said the standard is very high. It's pretty much insurmountable. It's pretty much always going to be an abuse of discretion for one court to assume jurisdiction under those circumstances. Here, I do think consent decrees are different, but I will say that there is another case out of the Fifth Circuit that suggests that it's not quite clear whether or not it's a jurisdictional bar or if it's an abuse of discretion standard, sort of like the one that the Ninth Circuit adopted in Lappin. I think that this court's jurisdiction, or that this court's case law is a little unclear on that point. And so if I were writing the opinion, I might do what this court did in footnote 2 of, West Gulf Maritime Association v. ILA Deep Sea Local 24, South Atlantic and Gulf Coast District of ILA. In footnote 2 there, it said, the standard isn't clear whether or not, when comity issues are at stake, whether or not it's a jurisdictional bar or whether or not it's an abuse of discretion standard. But we'll leave that for another day, because here it's clearly an abuse of discretion, and yeah. I would say that the same is true in this case. It's clearly an abuse of discretion.
Is it the state's position, I assume it's the other, I don't know if it's the other side's position, but is it the state's position that this Chisholm consent decree is still in force? It has not concluded by its own terms?
It is the state's position, Your Honor, and I believe it is also opposing. They sort of suggest at pages 12 and 13 of their
brief. Yeah, the reason I ask is, as I understand it, everything's, what is left to be accomplished in the Chisholm v. Romer consent decree? I understand why the 2012 it was reopened, if that's the correct word, because we had a dispute over the terms of the decree and how they applied to the tenure of the soon-to-be Chief Justice Johnson. So I get that. We had to reopen it. We had to figure that out. What's left to do? I mean, it's been accomplished.
I think the answer to that question, I'd refer you to their brief at footnote 6, where they acknowledge that the legislature could not, say, remove the majority-minority district from New Orleans now without violating the decree.
Okay, well, I will ask them about that. Do we have any more questions? Thank you. You'll have rebuttal time. Mr. Shaw.
May it please the court. Counsel for the state has spent a lot of time focusing on the issue of comity, but the plaintiffs would submit that that's really not at play here at all. And I'll begin by answering the question that Judge Duncan had just posed, which is what remains to be done with respect to the Chisholm decree? Well, in fact, the Eastern District answered this question in the 2012 case. If you look in the record at page 246 in the record, that's where the original Chisholm decree discusses that the court, the Eastern District, shall retain jurisdiction until the implementation of what it described as the complete implementation of the final remedy. That was discussed in Chisholm v. Jindal, and the court said there, and I'm going to quote here, because as will be explained in the pages to follow, the court finds that the consent judgment calls for Justice Johnson's tenure.
Sure, I get that. I totally get that, because there were terms in the original consent decree that talked about, I don't remember what it was, the emoluments of the office or something like that. And so that, so when the question of her tenure on the court arose, because she was on that court as a result of the consent decree in one way or the other, we had to figure out whether she was entitled to be Chief Justice or not. I get that. What I'm saying is, what's left to be done? I mean, the legislature has changed it. There's single-member districts. There's a majority-minority district. She was Chief Justice. She's not on the court anymore. What's left to be done? Why would anybody say that it's not terminated?
Judge Duncan, our position is that there is nothing more to be done, but that the Chisholm decree does remain in effect insofar as the state could not go and, say, eliminate the majority minority district that was created by that legislation. And as the court said in Chisholm v. Jindal, it retained jurisdiction, quote, until that final remedy is implemented, and that final remedy being the calculation of Justice Johnson's tenure. So the court has already acknowledged.
Do you know, as a just a factual matter, I know it's reaching far back in the past, but in Chisholm v. Romer, the consent decree, I asked this to the counsel for the state, the relief there was to take the single multi-member district that was diluting black voting strength and to form two single-member districts, right? One of which was going to be a majority-minority district. Did that relief involve, you know, fiddling around with all of the other districts in the state? Just as a factual matter, or was it targeted at Orleans Jefferson Parish?
Judge Duncan, the map has not changed as far as I'm aware since 1999. It's current since that time. I do not know, and I don't think it's in the record, whether any of the boundaries for the other judicial districts might have changed at that time.
We understand why I'm asking, right? Because, or let me make it clear, if the consent decree involved all of the districts in some way, as opposed to just this more narrowly focused question, then I understand the state's argument that somebody has now brought a lawsuit with respect to a different judicial district, but inevitably, as we litigate that and come up with a remedy, we're going to affect the map. So how can we do that outside the consent decree if it's still in effect?
Well, Your Honor, the answer is simple, is that the decree simply does not do that. And all of the decree, if you look in the record beginning on page—
Does not do what?
It does not implicate all of the districts throughout the state, because if you look at the language of the consent decree in the first paragraph, this is in the record at page 239. It starts right out talking about Orleans Parish, and in fact, if you go back and look at the 1987 or 88 complaint that was filed, it was on behalf of all blacks registered to vote in Orleans Parish. All of the relief described in the consent decree relates to Orleans Parish, what is now split between Districts 1 and District 7. Well, when the state finally in 1998 passed Act 776 that created the map that we now have, it actually did not comply exactly with the original terms of the decree. So it remains, you know, that if you look at the decree, it definitely pertains to Orleans Parish. You could consider an example where the state of Louisiana, in the due course of governance, had decided we're going to change the boundaries in, say, districts 4 and district 2 in the western part of the state around Shreveport. Well, there's nothing that would prevent the state of Louisiana, on the face of this, the Chisholm decree, from saying, due to demographic changes, we need to shift the boundaries, say, between districts 2 and 4. Would the plaintiffs to the Chisholm litigation have an opportunity or any basis in that instance to go back to the Eastern District and say, we don't like it that you have changed the boundaries between districts 2 and 4? Well, of course not, and that's because this idea that we're talking about a map is a bit fictitious. What we're actually talking about is voting rights, and the map, of course, must exist, but the court or the state can change the map as it so pleases. Well, as the Middle District correctly found, we believe in this instance, it can look at the map and say, we're gonna alter the boundaries of what is now District 5. Well, that may necessitate moving one or more precincts from some neighboring district into or out of District 5. We don't know what that will look like, but what we do know is that the only way the state of Louisiana can violate the Chisholm decree is if it eliminates the majority-minority district that was created by that decree so many years ago.
Gravel seemed fairly confident in his order that any remedy in this case could not affect the districts at issue in the Chisholm decree. I mean, is that? I mean, we can't really take that at face value. It's sort of predicting the future. But I mean, is it possible that a remedy, if you win in this litigation in the Middle District, that the remedy will inevitably have to affect the Orleans Parish district? I mean, you have to redraw the map. You have to redraw 5 of number 1, right? Isn't that the district we're talking about?
District 5 is the district in and around Baton Rouge.
Sorry, District 5. Yeah, you'd have to redraw it somehow, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. So there is some space on the map between Districts 5 and Districts 1 and 7 here in Orleans Parish. It is possible that some of the boundaries could change, but again,
what happens, though, if they change in such a way that may affect the population in the districts that are involved in the Chisholm decree?
If they change in such a way that the majority-minority district still exists, which is now District 7, then there would be no basis. So again, a slightly different hypothetical. You could imagine Orleans Parish is split between District 7 and District 1. Well, you could imagine that, again, in the due course of its governance, the state of Louisiana says, due to changes in demographics, we need to peel off a couple of precincts from District 1 and put them in District 7. But we're going to keep District 1 as a majority-minority district. What basis would the people in that precinct who had moved from District 1 to District 7 have to complain so long as the majority-minority district still exists?
Well,
none.
Of course, you know, we won't know how many precincts, if any, would be pulled out of Orleans Parish. And it could still be majority black, but if you reduce the percentage of majority black, blacks have a good argument that it violates their rights. I mean, to me, the problem was saying, oh, look, we can do this without interfering with Orleans Parish is we don't know how the district would be drawn. How would the, let's say we let Judge Gravel proceed with the case. I suppose he would have to give the legislature a shot at drawing the lines. We don't know what the legislature would do, so how do we know that you would wind up with a district that didn't impinge on the majority black district in Orleans?
Judge Davis, it's correct that we don't know, and by the same token, we don't know, as the state asserts, that there inherently will be a conflict between something that Judge DeGravels may do in the Middle District and something in the Chisholm decree. And that's what the state is saying here. The state is essentially arguing, and I believe counsel alluded to this earlier, that in perpetuity, the state of Louisiana can never move a single boundary as it pertains to the election of justices to the Supreme Court, to the state of Louisiana, without the permission of the Eastern District. But again, that's not only inconsistent with the language of the decree, it's just absurd to think that the state can't move around or shift around districts, and that whatever it does as a result of this litigation as a question of remedy will inherently conflict with the Chisholm decree.
Yeah, I don't see, theoretically anyway, how the plaintiffs in your case are damaged. They can go, they have a remedy. They can go to the Eastern District and get their remedy. So why would we want to allow for the possibility that it would impinge or interfere with the districts in Orleans Parish? I mean, what's the reason we would do that when your clients have the state has a perfectly good remedy in the Eastern District?
Judge Davis, the burden, we would say, is on the state, actually, to demonstrate why the plaintiffs are denied their choice of forum. The individual plaintiffs in this case reside and vote in East Baton Rouge Parish. They've brought this action, which, as Judge DeGravelle's found in his opinion, denying the motion to dismiss, concerns the district in and around Baton Rouge. So I think the answer to your question is, what would be so difficult for the state of Louisiana? Because actually, the only party to this litigation with plenary power to violate the Chisholm decree is the state, and we take them at their word that they don't intend to do that. So what would preclude the state from saying, we agree to litigate this case in the Middle District where the plaintiffs reside, where in fact they allege that their rights are being violated, which is consistent with, if you look at 28 U.S.C. 1391, the venue statute, that's where the right is being violated. So why couldn't the state of Louisiana, which is seated in Baton Rouge, let the litigation proceed there? Because the state can know.
I mean, I think you have to admit that there's a potential for violating the decree, the consent decree. And why should we live with that? I mean, it's just most of the cases when there's that potential, it goes back to the court that issued the consent judgment. Why shouldn't we just follow that general rule?
Judge Davis, there's a potential, even if this lawsuit had never been brought, that the state of Louisiana could decide that it's going to do away with the majority-minority district that is now District 7. If it did that, we don't deny that the state would be in violation of the Chisholm decree.
Right.
But
I mean, so there's a possibility that a remedy might interfere with the decree. You don't deny that. I don't see it. Judge DeGravel was very confident that it wouldn't, but we seem to be in a state of uncertainty on that. So the question is, you know, how do we decide the case? I mean, it's, as you just pointed out, it's not a question of denying jurisdiction to bring a Voting Rights Act case. It's a question effectively of venue, as I understand it. So what should we look to then? I mean, should we look to the terms of the consent decree? And can we confidently say by reading the terms of the consent decree that it has nothing to do with the litigation here with respect to a different district?
Yes, Judge Duncan, you should look to the terms of the consent decree. And again, just going back to the sort of foundational principle.
Why did Judge DeGravel say later that the net effect of your lawsuit is identical to the consent decree, to the relief sought in the consent decree? What does he mean by that?
Judge Duncan, my understanding was that he meant simply that, as our complaint alleges at paragraphs 4 and 5, that we would be creating the state's second majority-minority district. So the relief is the same insofar as the aim of this litigation is to create a majority-minority district, but not at the expense of getting rid of the first one. It would be a far cry for the NAACP to come to court and say, we want to create a majority-minority district, but get rid of the other one. That would obviously be pointless to do. So I think that's what Judge DeGravel meant by that, and he recognizes that the aim, as expressly alleged in the complaint, is for the state of Louisiana, which is made up of approximately 30% black voters, but has only about 14% representation, if you look at the
you know, it's
districts.
Just a matter of fact, it's probably not in the record in this case, but maybe it's in your complaint. Where are the population clusters in Louisiana that make up that 30% of African-American voting? I mean, where generally are they in the state?
The primary population clusters, Your Honor, are in the area of New Orleans. Orleans and Baton Rouge. Those are the two primary areas, in my understanding.
And the remedy that, I know you don't specify a remedy specifically in your complaint, at least I don't think you do. What is the kind of remedy that would be envisioned if you win this lawsuit?
Your Honor, the remedy would be to create for the state, through the legislature, as Judge Davis mentioned, to create a second fairly drawn majority-minority district in and around Baton Rouge and what is now District 5. And
what happens to the space in between the population center that you would use to create the majority-minority district in Baton Rouge and the one that exists already in Orleans Parish? What happens to that? You have to shift that around, right? The borders.
No, not necessarily. Well, you could shift some. So, I mean, without being a demographics expert in, you know, in how the population looks, and of course there's going to be, you know, census data that will indicate that. We don't know exactly where the borders will shift. I mean, you might imagine, for example, that in the western part of the state, the borders don't need to shift. We don't have a way to say that right now and to predict that. But again, you mentioned that, you know, we would say that there's a possibility that the decree will be impinged upon by any relief we get out of the middle district. Well, no. The only possibility that we see that would impinge upon the Chisholm decree would be for the state to outright eliminate that district.
I mean, that's not on the table. I mean, that's obviously not on the table. We're talking about a shifting of the boundaries in order to make a new majority-minority district and imagining what effect that would have on the Chisholm district. And you're saying there's no possibility.
Your Honor, we allege in the complaint that there is at least one way to redraw the lines such that District 7 is not impacted. And that, of course, would be a focus of a trial on the merits. And we've alleged that, and Judge DeGravelle acknowledged that. So we believe that there is at least one way. We have grounds to allege that. And again, even if there was some minor modification to District 7 here in Orleans Parish, there's no reason to think that the state of Louisiana wants to do away with that district.
Yeah, no, that's just not the question. I mean, if there's some minor modification to District 7, then that implicates the Chisholm decree that everybody agrees is still in force.
You know,
why it's in force, I couldn't tell you, but go ahead.
As you well know, the only black congressional district in Louisiana includes a big group of precincts in East Baton Rouge. So in the legislature's wisdom, that's the way they drew that one. There's no written, you know, we don't know if they'd do the same thing or a similar thing, but we know that's what they did in drawing the majority black congressional district.
That is correct, Your Honor. And again, we don't know what the legislature would do. What we do know is that the plaintiffs in this case they are definitely third parties to the litigation, the Chisholm litigation. They are not all blacks registered to vote in Orleans Parish. So to the extent someone might have the ability to challenge something about the Chisholm decree, it would be the members of that class. Well, as the Supreme Court held in Martin v. Wilkes, there's no basis to believe that our plaintiffs who seek different relief, who reside in a different part of the state, who vote in a different part of the state, should be precluded from bringing their case in a form of their choice when there's no evidence that we're seeking to attack that decree. In fact,
you're saying, but Martin, that's an employment case, right? What was the subject of the Wilkes case?
The Wilkes case, Judge Duncan, involved essentially employment. It was a group of firefighters.
Okay, so I remember that. So the difficulty here is the inevitably the remedy in a voting rights challenge to a judicial district is going to involve something sort of much more involved and interrelated than the consent decree in that case. It's just I understand the general principle in that case. It's just this is voting rights litigation is much more complicated.
Counsel, can I just back us up for a second to make sure that we're all focused on the right case? The way I understand what happened is that there was a 12B1 motion and a 12B6 motion decided by Judge Gravel, certified for interlocutory appeal. It has nothing to do with the merits, has nothing to do with what the boundary lines are eventually going to be look like years hence. The question is whether there's subject matter jurisdiction or 12B1. There's no 12B3 motion for improper venue in the middle district, and there's a 12B6 motion for failure to state a claim. Is that correct?
Yes, that is generally correct, Judge Oldham, except that the 12B6 motion wasn't appealed. So we're here on the...
So it's just 12B1. So the only question is, if I'm understanding that correctly, is there subject matter jurisdiction in the Middle District of Louisiana for your complaint?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So really it boils down to, there's clearly subject matter jurisdiction under 1331. Everyone agrees, rising under the laws and treaties of the United States. And can a consent decree abrogate an act of Congress?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
And in his order, Judge DeGravel talked about the possibility of what the remedy in this lawsuit is going to interfere with a consent decree that for some reason everybody exists still.
Judge Duncan, it does still exist because that district was created as a result of that litigation. But I see my time has run out. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Your Honors, just really quickly, I want to say that Judge DeGravel's order at in the record 568 to 570 sort of explains how the consent decree is implicated by the relief that the plaintiffs are seeking here. And Judge Oldham, I would like to address just your point. I would say that there's a case in the Fifth Circuit that says, it's called Gregory Portland Independent School District, the Texas Ed Agency, and it does come pretty close to laying down a jurisdictional bar when the comity issues are at play.
It's comity between two federal district judges without regard to comity between the judicial branch and Congress.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, and it's the orderly administration of justice, that seems to be, so the court might be bound simply by precedent on that point, but there is some questions I pointed to the other case that suggests that maybe it's an abuse of discretion standard.
So let's just assume for the sake of discussion that it is a jurisdictional rule. Let's just assume for the sake of discussion that we're bound by the rule of orderliness to so hold. Let's further assume that in determining whether we have 1331 jurisdiction in the Middle District, the way to do that is to just assume there's going to be a conflict between whatever remedies ordered in the Middle District and the Chisholm consent decree. Could the state not fix all of that by literally moving under Rule 60B tomorrow and say, this potential exists, there's obviously subject matter jurisdiction in the Middle District, and that's what makes it impracticable for us to have a continuing 50-year-old consent decree signed by people who have long left office? Would that fix it?
I believe it would. I believe that we could do that. But plaintiffs could also do that, or they could. And so because they could also do that, this...
I'm sorry, the plaintiffs in this case could? Or the plaintiffs in the Chisholm case could?
I believe the plaintiffs in the Chisholm, in this case, could move to intervene. The state has already stipulated that it would not object to that.
So they could move to intervene in the Eastern District and then move under Rule 60, even though they're not parties to the consent decree.
Just initiate a new lawsuit. Once they closed that case, then they could. Then of course they can initiate a new lawsuit, and there would be no problem there. The difference between this case and Martin v. Wilkes, they did try to intervene in Martin v. Wilkes. The white firefighters tried to intervene in the case where there was the consent decree, and the court said, no, sorry. It's too late. You can't intervene. And so
suppose the plaintiffs. So you said you stipulated that you would allow that. You wouldn't oppose their intervention.
Correct.
Would you oppose their Rule 60B motion?
If they moved here
in the Eastern District. So I understand what you're saying is that if they moved to intervene in the Eastern District, the state of Louisiana would say that's fine. Welcome to the Chisholm Party. And then my question is, when they then file the Rule 60B motion to dissolve the consent decree, would the state oppose that?
Not to the extent that if they were trying to argue that the case was final, that the Chisholm decree was done. No, of course not. And then they can bring their claims, and we have no problem with that. But what the state doesn't want to happen is it doesn't want to be bound by two different federal district court orders that require different maps.
I'm surprised by that answer because it seems like if the state doesn't care whether the consent decree stays or goes, then how in the world can it be an obstacle to a 1331 jurisdiction in the Middle District? Now we're only talking about who is the movant, but it would be a joint motion either way. Either the state could do it, without the help of the plaintiffs, or the plaintiffs could do it with the support of the state. Either way, the consent decree goes away, and this is all over.
Correct, but now since the decree is live, at least Judge Morgan told us that it was still live and in effect, and now Judge DeGravel is saying that he has jurisdiction to amend the map or to change things, then the state is stuck in a very sort of precarious position. But I agree with you that if we just simply moved, but if it is a jurisdictional issue, of course, then this court should simply dismiss. If it is an abuse of discretion standard, though, I do want to say that where there is a remedy, as Judge Davis mentioned, and where they could intervene and there's no problem and the litigation has been going on for years and years, the expertise is there, there's no reason why it is absolutely an abuse of discretion under either standard. Thank you.
Thank you for a well-argued case. Case is under submission. That concludes our oral arguments for the day and this panel.